This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervey, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I'm here to be the managing partner of your life. I hate these headphones. I need some new headphones. Carrie Kasem is here with me, and I can't hear a thing, so I'm going to change my headphones. Carrie, you take over. Take this show right through the final 1 hour.
I'll do all the interviews, Alan. You just sit back.
I can't hear you at all.
Sit back.
I can't hear you. Carrie Kasem. Go ahead.
No,
you do a monologue. I'm changing my earphones.
You can change your earphones. I'm sure there's some over there. I have to tell you that today is going to be a very scary show for me because this is a volatile subject. And, you know, we have you who is, Jewish. I'm an Arab American. And, you
what's
know.
What's that? What did you say?
You were Jewish and I'm an Arab American.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I'm
so
just saying, you have not finished
right
with what I was going to say. We have gotten along for the last 4.5 years.
No, we haven't.
No issues. Oh, besides having arguments about certain things on our show.
Whether to use Botox or not.
Yes, exactly. And I have a really great product for you, by the way, after the show. So, anyway, I'm just saying, we have no issues here in America. There's not an issue with that. It doesn't matter what religion you are. So, to bring this on.
Wait a second. Did you just say it doesn't matter?
Not in
what
the U.S.
religion
people,
in the U.S.?
For
seriously?
People, yes.
Seriously.
Let me tell you something. For the most part, in where I've traveled and everything, this is the safest place to be whatever religion you want to be.
Let me tell you two stories. When I was 13 years old, I was the star pitcher for the Lord Roberts Beavers.
You were in Canada.
Star pitcher.
You were in Canada.
And on June 21st, 1975, I had my bar mitzvah. The next week, I never played another game.
You were in Canada. You are making my point for me.
What? So Canadians?
That's not the USA.
Anti-Semitism exists in Canada, but not in the US. When I ran for president of my high school, they started a chant, "Don't elect a Jew, don't elect a Jew." It was Mark Finette who started that chant. I got elected, nevertheless. I don't care if you want to differentiate between Canada and the U.S. Anti-Semitism is alive and well.
I didn't say anything about that. My God, Alan, I must have struck a chord because you're not listening and your headphones must not be working because I said nothing about that. I said it's the safest country in the world to be whatever religion you want to be. That is what I said and I'm going to stick by it. And you raising your voice at me and talking about Canada is not going to change my mind. Here's our first fight on air. I like it.
All right. So today we're going to talk about the December 6th announcement by President Trump that the embassy in Israel would be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And we have two experts who understand the underpinnings of the dispute, are not simply just going to talk about, I believe, religion, but we'll talk about why certain people are not happy about this and other, I guess not happy about it is putting it mildly, and other people are cheering for President Trump's move, which started back in 1995 when we talk about the Jerusalem Embassy Act, and all the presidents since then have waived the actual movement of the embassy to Jerusalem, and it was just the first time on December 6th after Trump had waived it in June, but said no, there was no waiver, and apparently it is now in motion, and we're not sure. Vice President Pence said it would be by 2019. I'm not sure why it takes so long to get up and move things, just pick up the boxes and the files and go to Jerusalem, but I guess there's a lot that we can see will play out in the next year and a half or 2 years. Obviously, this has been an explosive situation. A lot of the Middle Eastern countries are saying that it will prevent peace from taking place in the future. And we want to welcome to the show right now Khalid El-Gindi, I'm sorry. He's the fellow of the Center for Middle East Policies at the Brookings Institute and a founding board member of the Egyptian American Rule of Law Association. He served as an advisor to the Palestinian leadership in Ramallah on permanent status negotiations with Israel and was a key participant in the Annapolis negotiations held in 2008. He's the co-author of The Arab Awakening, American and the Transformation of the Middle East. We also have with us Professor Eugene Kontrovich. He teaches at Northwestern University School of Law. He specializes in constitutional law, federal courts, and public international law. He's a co-author of the newly published book, Economics and Analysis of International Law. He's a preeminent expert on international law and the Israeli-Arab conflict. He's contributed to the Washington Post Volokh Conspiracy Legal Blog. We have Eugene Volokh on our show all the time. So we are very familiar with the Volokh Conspiracy. Gentlemen, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Pleasure to be here.
I only heard one voice. I need to hear it's a pleasure to be there, hear from both of you.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Okay, so we're going to have to make sure we know who's who because you obviously have divergent opinions, and you can see that the co-hosts here probably are on both sides of this issue, so we'll need some help. First of all, Khalid El-Gindi, tell us why this move by President Trump has caused a lot of upset in the Arab community.
Well, first of all, just one correction to something that you mentioned in your introduction. President Trump did sign the waiver on the Embassy Move Act, just as the three presidents before him had.
And that's the very same. That's what I did say.
He announced that he would make the move. But he did sign the waiver.
And I did say that. I did say, okay. We can play back the tape, but I did say, I believe.
I just really wanted to
clarify. He signed the waiver in June. I believe it was in June. He signed the waiver and then announced it at December 6th. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's two aspects to any issue that deals with Israel. One has to do with foreign policy and national security. That's one dimension of the issue. And the other is domestic policy. And very often those two are in conflict. Trump's decision to move the embassy was purely motivated by domestic political considerations. He made only the, I think, thinnest possible attempt to try to justify it on the basis of foreign policy or in terms of the peace process, but it's pretty clear that there's a reason why this has been the policy of the United States for 70 years. Actually, it's been the policy of the United States since even before Israel's existence, because Jerusalem is such a sensitive issue. So all of the arguments were made against this sort of a thing. And that's why the presidents had the waiver and that's why they used them. So to argue, I think that this somehow can fit with an American-led peace process simply doesn't make sense. The fact is that Jerusalem is a holy city to Jews, obviously, but also to Christians and to Muslims, but also at a political level between Israelis and Palestinians. It is the symbol of their respective national identities. And so for that reason, it is highly contentious. And from the standpoint of the Palestinians, by taking this position, the United States has basically disqualified itself from serving as a broker. And in doing so, it's also out of step with the overwhelming majority of the international consensus.
But let's look what is underlying all this. Does Israel have the right to indicate that Jerusalem is its capital, have the Knesset there, and have the president, the prime minister Netanyahu, and ceremonial president there? Can't they, given the situation, whether right or wrong, can't they determine that? And if they've determined that Jerusalem is the capital, why shouldn't other countries follow suit with having their embassies in the capital?
Well, Israel, first of all, made that. Oh, sorry, were you asking me or...
Khaled, why don't you answer that? And yes, I understand Israel has made that clear. That's their position. The question is,
right,
why should they not, why should Americans not follow that if that's Israel's, Israel's directive?
Well, because Jerusalem is a special case. Jerusalem is not Washington, D.C. It's not Paris. It's not Cairo or Rome or Moscow. It is a unique city that is holy to three faiths, and that is the source of an identity of two nationalities, two national movements that are presently in a conflict. And it is the most contentious issue in that conflict. And so for that reason, the United States and the overwhelming majority of the international community has avoided moving their embassies to Jerusalem, irrespective of Israel's wishes, precisely because it is such a contentious and very sensitive issue. And so it is because Jerusalem is unique. As a practical matter, Palestinians want to have a state with East Jerusalem as their capital. Both sides of Jerusalem are currently controlled by Israel. So by taking one side in this dispute on this very highly contentious issue, the United States has really diminished, I think, its credibility. And it is, as I said, out of step with the international consensus.
Professor Kontrovich, I don't think that you agree with that. Why don't you respond? Because you obviously believe that the Americans can do what they wish and that the Israelis have designated Jerusalem as the capital, and that's what foreign countries like Russia, who actually acknowledged it before the U.S. did.
Indeed. Every country has a right to set its own capital. To say that the one country with a Jewish majority, the Jewish state, is uniquely disabled from establishing its capital in a city which has historically been its capital is, I think, a special kind of disablement for the world's Jewish state. And, of course, the United States, as a sovereign country, can recognize any capital it wants of any country. And as President Trump said, President Trump made his justifications and his reasons very clear. They are indeed reasons of foreign policy, not domestic policy. He said, Jerusalem is, in fact, Israel's capital, and we look stupid ignoring this reality. It is indeed where the Knesset sits. When American dignitaries go to meet with the prime minister, they go to Jerusalem. And pretending that something is that's real is not real, whether it's good or bad, helpful or not helpful, simply covering your eyes and plugging your ears, that's not a useful policy. But at the same time, there is a domestic policy aspect, and there's nothing wrong with that because this is the United States, and Congress passed a law in 1995 calling for the embassy to be in Jerusalem, an overwhelmingly bipartisan law. And President Trump said, I'm implementing that law. And that law provided that it could be waived, but it gave one narrow grounds for waiver, that it's essential for national security.
Now, that's what I'm thinking. Real quick, security. Right? How are you going to move a capital to Jerusalem and keep everybody safe?
So let me address that. All the foreign policy experts have been wrong on this. If I was a Middle Eastern policy expert, I would retire now.
You're much too young.
Since this law was passed, all the experts said if you recognize Jerusalem as the capital, there is going to be mass violence in the streets. The Arab world will be set on fire. There's going to be terrorism everywhere. Things are going to be blowing up. It's going to be insane. I testified in Congress a few weeks before the announcement, and I said that these prophecies of doom are completely overstated and misguided, and they may have been right in 1995. They're not right anymore. The guy on the panel, Michael Coppola, who was arguing the other side, has actually done something quite extraordinary since then and actually admitted that he was wrong. Because this announcement was met with no wave of violence. Indeed, the Arab world is already racked with violence from completely other causes, and this is priority number 1,000.
You know,
the national security justification was not justified, and all of the predictions of doom
Eugene, we want to pick up on that after break. We have to take a quick break, but I want to talk about the realities of what occurs after this announcement is made and whether or not what you're saying is true or not, what we've seen thus far and what we expect to see in the coming months as we move forward to an actual move. You're listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
The horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to GEICO.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
The horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to GEICO.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Doctor, give me the news. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and on the next Midday Lab, we'll take your calls, and I'll be joined by Arihita Sadagatfar. Lauren Savant is... She's busy. She's a very busy lady, don't you know? She'll be back soon enough, and we will discuss, amongst other things, Mr. Trump defending an alleged perpetrator of domestic violence. How's that all gone? With that and more on the next Midday Live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervais and Kerry Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yes, we're back right here in Gervais Law. I'm Alan Gervais. I'm here with Kerry Kasem. We are not speaking to each other. For all of you who've been listening to us for many, many years, we had a major blow up in the first segment, and we won't even look at each other. We're both looking at Debbie Payne, our producer here. We won't have eye contact, but the show must go on. The show will be going on. Now, for those of you who are just joining us, you might be wondering why this dispute is taking place. Well, we are speaking about a very explosive topic today. It is President Trump's announcement that the American embassy, will be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And what the response is, we have two experts on the line who are helping us along with the substantive issues and the intellectual issues, not just simply the emotional issues. And they are Khaled El-Gindi, who is a fellow at the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institute, and he's a founding board member of the Egyptian American Rule of Law Association, and Professor Eugene Kontrovich, who teaches at Northwestern University School of Law. He specializes in international law, constitutional law, and is a preeminent expert in the Israeli-Arab conflict. Gentlemen, first I'll start with you, Professor Kontrovich. We were talking before the break about the peace process, and I know Khaled El-Gindi brought up the fact that this is going to hamper the peace process. Mustafa Barghouti, who's a member of the Palestinian Liberation Organization Central Council, said with respect to the peace process, it's over. There has been a lot of rhetoric in the media about the Palestinians not coming to the table. Is that something, Professor Kontrovich, you are concerned about for a peaceful resolution between the two states?
I'm not concerned about it at all, because for two reasons. Firstly, I think the peace process was dead already, or at least unlikely to yield substantive results. And secondly, if it still had any life in it, the action of the United States, followed by other countries, is only likely to improve it, which is not something the Palestinians are necessarily going to be happy about, but I think it could indeed empower the peace process. Let me briefly explain both points. The so-called Oslo process, the two-state process, has been going on since at least 1993, and since then, the Palestinians have rejected numerous U.S. and internationally backed offers in 2000, in 2001. More recently, there was a proposal in 2014, and these have all been rejected, and it doesn't seem that there's any path to a solution that both parties could agree on. But there's a reason the Palestinians reject these offers, in that there's an understanding in the international community. There's been this bad habit that every time a deal fails, or the Palestinians don't accept a deal, the understanding has been that in the next round, whatever Israel offered the first time is going to be just the floor for future negotiations. In other words, the negotiations are going to pick up where they left off, and the Palestinians can only get more in the next round. No wonder peace talks haven't succeeded. If you know every rejected proposal is just going to be a floor for new negotiations, why say yes? Keep waiting. Trump has reversed that logic. And what he is indeed saying to the Palestinians is, guys, if you don't get on the bus, it's going without you. That is to say, the next offer isn't going to be better than the last offer. The next offer could be worse. And that gives an urgent need to make a deal. If there previously wasn't a willingness to make a deal, this is not surprising. The Palestinian leadership is going to be unhappy. They don't like to see this dynamic change, but that dynamic has not been successful. It hasn't worked. And Trump's saying, if it doesn't work, don't use it again. Definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over and hoping for different results.
Well, I don't know, you know, I don't know that.
Sign up now.
I don't know that President Trump has that kind of insight that you're talking about. I think a lot of it may be just his rhetoric. Khaled, why don't you respond to what Eugene's saying? Because again, you know, to base it on President Trump's intuition on the Middle East, I think, perhaps what you said initially, that this was a campaign promise that he was going to follow through on, maybe that's as deep as it goes here, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that this is a move that was motivated purely by domestic politics. There is no peace process dimension to this, other than an attempt to sort of retroactively squeeze the square peg into the round hole. But it's not going to fit. It is fundamentally incompatible with the basic principles of the peace process that have been in place for many, many decades. I agree with Mr. Kontrovich that the peace process has been a miserable failure. But my view, it's precisely for the opposite set of reasons. Mr. Kontrovich talked about the Palestinians as if they wield all of this influence over the United States and the international community, when in fact they are the weakest party in this entire arrangement, and in fact are actually occupied by the party that they are supposedly negotiating with. And so that is one very important dynamic that is very often missing from discussions, which is power. Israel is an occupying power. It occupies, in fact, East Jerusalem, the part that Palestinians want as their capital. But it also occupies almost 4 million Palestinians. It rules over their lives in almost every way. To imagine that a peace process can take place without addressing that fundamental power imbalance is completely illusory. And that is what essentially the peace process has done, and that's the reason that it's failed.
But isn't there also, let me just interrupt you here and ask you a question, isn't there a reason more than that? I mean, the way you say it, it makes perfect sense, but when we talk about the violence and we talk about what has occurred in what you call the occupied territories, you yourself talk about the Palestinian leadership has some issues, and I think, you know, that's well known. If it was as simple as you're making it, why aren't the Palestinians and their leadership coming to the table as peacefully as you suggest?
Well, I'm not suggesting that their leadership has been strategic or wise or, effective in their decision making. There are many problems with this leadership, the previous leadership, one of which I would say is to have no strategic plan other than to rely on the United States. The entire strategy of the PLO for the past 30 years has been based on an expectation that only the United States can deliver Israel. Only the United States has the influence with Israel to actually make it do things like end the occupation and bring about a Palestinian state. And that's true. Israel does not have confidence in any other mediator besides the United States. But the flip side of that is that the United States hasn't used its enormous leverage with Israel the way it uses sticks with the Palestinians. So what you have is you have the United States is the mediator. It puts a lot of pressure on the Palestinians. That's been the modus operandi of the peace process. And it puts no pressure on Israel. And in fact, only offers Israel carrots. And what Trump has done by recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital is it has taken away the last bit of incentive that Palestinians had in an American-led peace process.
So Eugene, can you tell me whether you believe that this is all the Americans' fault?
When President Obama came into office 9 years ago, he said something very important. He said he believed... He shared this perspective, that the problem with the peace process was that America was too closely aligned with Israel, that America was seen as too much as being in Israel's corner, and that he wanted to put some daylight, to use his word, between America and Israel. And he began a policy of indeed being very critical on Israel, and using lots of sticks and the number of diplomatic flats between America.
Could you name one or two sticks, please, that Obama used with Israel?
Yeah, absolutely. The principal stick is repeated condemnations followed by allowing a Security Council resolution to pass, which was the most harsh Security Council. That's a huge one. He took many other steps, like threatening to withhold funds, threatening to withhold various cooperation over settlement building, and getting Bibi and coercing Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister seen as most supportive of the settlements, to actually agree to a 10-month moratorium on settlement building. And these were massive actions with historic ramifications. And what we saw is it did not work. Now, the Palestinians are not powerless, by the way. There's two incompatible claims made about the Palestinians. One is that they have no power, they're weak, Israel has all the strength. The other is that Israel should give the Palestinians what they want. Otherwise, they're going to have to deal with the Palestinians' big friend, the international community. Now, of course, all the Arab states back the Palestinians, all of Israel's neighbors, as does the automatic voting majority at the UN, the European Union. All of these have been taking active measures using strong sticks in terms of trade restrictions, in terms of strong condemnation against Israel. And the Palestinians do have a strategy. I think their strategy is not to rely on the United States. President Abbas made it quite clear that the strategy is the internationalization of the conflict.
Eugene, we have to take a quick break, and I want to get back to Khaled and ask him whether or not there is some strength on the Palestinians and those countries that support him by perhaps isolating Israel through the media and through popular opinion. We'll talk about that in a minute. If you want to get in on this discussion, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222. You're listening to Gervais Law. We'll be right back.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-471-9807. That's 800-471-9807. 800-471-9807. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health issue and company and other factors. Not available in all states.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Police in Central Ohio say two officers have been fatally shot at a home in a Columbus suburb, and a suspect is in custody. Westerville Police Chief Joe Morbitzer.
These were two of the best we have. This was their calling, and they did it right. They knew how to do policing the right way, both of them. Both gave their life in protection of others, and that's what they lived and breathed.
In other news, Larry Nassar, the disgraced former USA Gymnastics team doctor who admitted to sexually abusing underage girls, has been transferred from a Michigan facility to a federal prison in Tucson, Arizona, to start a 60-year sentence for child pornography crimes. KABC SoCal weather. Temperatures are expected to cool off to the 60s and low 70s this weekend and all next week, with some rain possible by Tuesday or Wednesday. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervais Law on Talk Radio 790, KABC.
Yeah. Well, this one, I don't know if it's half empty, because usually we're always talking about the glass being half full, but I'm looking at Gary and it looks half empty. Carrie, what do you think?
Oh, I think this is the most full we've had our cup, I think, on this show.
My mic wasn't working either.
I said this is a very full show. Extremely full.
No, but the cup runneth over.
Yes, it does.
We are talking today about President Trump's announcement that the embassy, American embassy in Israel, will be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And that obviously has caused a huge stir. We were talking about sticks and stirs and sticks and stones and a lot of different conflict that occur as a result of this. We're honored to have with us Khaled Al-Ghindi, who is with the Brookings Institute. And then, of course, we have Eugene Kontorovich, who is with Northwestern University School of Law, debating this issue. Gentlemen, before the break, we talked about some of the substance of what is underlying the conflict. And we talked about the peace process, which may in fact be something of the past, even though there hasn't been a whole lot of movement. Bottom line, when we talk about the embassy moving, tell us whether you think that it actually will take place, and if so, are we going to see a lot of protests? Because so far, while people predicted there would be a lot of violence and a lot of disputes, I read that the Palestinians just are too tired. They're exhausted. And I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not there, but they just don't have that right now until maybe the move takes place.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible really to predict with this administration what they will or won't do. The last statement that I saw coming out of the White House was that they were looking at something, a move taking place sometime before the end of 2019. So if we take them at their word, that is not that far away. As far as the reaction, it's true. The reaction in the region and to a certain extent among Palestinians has been relatively muted. But certainly the conditions in the region are part of that equation. We wouldn't expect, for example, Syrians who are engulfed in a major humanitarian crisis and a civil war and a brutal dictatorship, that this would somehow be the issue that registers first and foremost on their radar. And the rest of the region has also, to varying degrees, their own domestic problems.
But it only takes one terrorist. It only takes one, you know, one person to do harm and to do damage. And I just think the common sense is really missing here. You're going into a part of the country that is so volatile and has been for a very long time. No matter who's right, who's wrong, doesn't matter. What you're doing by making this move is just aggravating an already volatile subject. And for somebody to say, oh, it's not going to matter, may not matter to you or to the people who are doing this, or to maybe to the same people of Palestine or the same people of Israel or whatever it may. There may be sane people there that may not do anything. It takes one. How are you going to keep that place safe? It's not going to happen. It's just not.
America has never decided to base its embassy and foreign recognition decisions on the possible acts of a crazy person. And indeed, American embassies have been bombed by crazy people in the past. In 1996, the embassy in Tanzania and the embassy in Kenya were blown up.
Right.
And America didn't say, wow, there are some crazy people here. They said, we're going to build stronger embassies. We're going to fortify our embassies, rather than letting the crazy people have a veto on U.S. foreign policy.
That makes sense. But the two countries that you named, yes, there has been volatility out there, but nothing like the Middle East. Nothing.
I'm sorry to interject, but there's another dimension to this that we keep overlooking, and that is Jerusalem is not like other places. In addition to being a holy city, half of the city is occupied territory. So it's a question of international law. So when the United States makes a move to a city like Jerusalem to move its embassy, and the law that was referenced, the 1995 law passed by Congress, refers to Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel. Congress doesn't make foreign policy, but if it did, that would be a violation of international law, because the undivided Jerusalem, half of it is occupied territory, where settlements are being built illegally, and where certainly moving an embassy to the city would confer recognition over what Israel declares to be its capital on all sides of Jerusalem, including the part that is occupied.
Professor,
so
go
it's
ahead.
It's not a question of Israel being singled out to choose its own embassy. Israel is an occupying power. It occupies militarily through coercion. It is there by force. Israelis, Palestinians in East Jerusalem are not citizens of Israel with the right to vote.
Professor Kontrovich, I want to ask you this. Do Israelis feel that they should just disregard the wars that took place, whether it's 1967, the Yom Kippur War, whatever it is, 1948? Should they just forget about that and say all the lives that they've tried to protect or that they've lost on their side should just be set aside because there should be this kind of equal division of land and politics?
Yeah, let me answer that question and then address some of Khaled's points about international law. My sense is that Israelis are not living in the past. They are not dwelling on past hostilities. Israel has made peace with some of its most implacable neighbors, Egypt and Jordan, despite very bloody wars with Egypt in particular. And I think the, you know, as an Israeli prime minister said, you make peace with your enemies, not with your friends. What worries Israel is not the wars that took place before peace. What worries Israel is the wars that took place after peace. That is to say, the peace process led to the so-called Second Intifada, which Israelis often call the Oslo War, in which over 1,000 Israelis were blown up in cafes, in sidewalks, in markets, on buses. And the peace dividend, as Israelis, Israelis would love a peace dividend, and would not be held back by history from that. But what they see is the dividend of peace is death, and that is not very exciting. Now, Israel's claim is that it is not an occupying power, and it has a strong basis in international law for that. The borders of Israel were never clearly set. And when a new country is created, what are its borders? The borders of the last administrative unit in that territory, which was the British Mandate, which certainly included Jerusalem. But I think it's also important to point out that the current debate over Jerusalem has nothing to do with the alleged occupation, because even Western Jerusalem, which has no connection to the Palestinian claims, which existed long before the Six-Day War, in which Israel took control of the West Bank and Eastern Jerusalem, the opposition is to recognition of even that. And I think there's been a sort of pendulum swing. America had this absurd position where even Western Jerusalem, where the government sits, which has no connection to the Six-Day War until 1967 and the territories that came under Israel's control then. Even that wasn't recognized as being in Jerusalem, and that was a position so absurd it had to be corrected. And in its correction, the pendulum has indeed swung the other way, and the U.S. is indeed recognizing a unified Jerusalem. There's nothing in international law that binds America to the United Nations view of occupation. And they are free to say that Eastern Jerusalem is within the borders of Israel, which is, by the way, not the same as saying that it shouldn't be part of a Palestinian state in peace negotiations. All peace negotiations so far have contemplated that there would be parts of sovereign Israel that would be put under the sovereignty of a Palestinian state.
You bring up the United Nations. What role will they play, if any?
They will continue to condemn Israel, as they always have. And those condemnations will be of little effect, I suspect, because America is the world's leading power. Countries are going to follow America. I was on Worldview, WBZ show with Rashid Khalidi maybe 2 years ago, at the beginning of the Trump administration, a year ago. And I predicted that when America does move the embassy, its action will be followed by other countries, and this consensus will be broken. So that is indeed already the case. Guatemala is going to follow suit. And when the embassy is actually moved, I think we're going to see even more countries join this move.
Well, there may be more countries, but they're certainly not going to be the majority of them, because we see in United Nations votes all the time that there isn't a whole lot of support for anything in Israel. And again, what America does that supports Israel is not going to see a lot of support in the United Nations. We only have a couple more minutes with you. We want to get some final thoughts. Carrie, I know you're itching to ask a question.
No, I was actually, I love how you look at me and do that. I sit here nodding.
Well, at least I'm looking at you. We weren't looking at each other before.
And agreeing. No, I was actually agreeing with the UN. I know that they have not, you know, been kind to Israel. I just take another look at some of the things that I'm seeing as well, that I go, that doesn't seem okay. But if I were to say them, or if I were to ask questions about them, then I'm anti-Semitic. So I've really set back, because there are some things that both sides have done that are horrible. But, you know, you say anything you mention or ask a question and all of a sudden there's backlash. So you have to be extremely careful with that. I just want peace. And I think that if you move this, you know, embassy, if you move this to Jerusalem, we're going to be in trouble here.
Okay, as a lawyer, we always say, so what's your question?
It was a comment.
It was a narrative, and we have our two guests. So final question. What was that you just said, Carrie, that it's going to be a mess if this occurs? Let's ask both of them. What's going to occur, and will it be a mess? I know you can't speculate, but first, in a minute or less, Khaled El-Ghindi, tell us what's going to happen with this situation.
Well, whether or not it causes enormous upheaval in the region, it may or may not. But I think the single most important fallout will be political, and that is that the United States will be seen not just by Palestinians and the Arab world, but by the rest of the international community as no longer fit to play a role in the peace process. Because if there is no daylight between the United States and Israel, then what value does the United States have as a mediator? That Palestinians couldn't simply get from Israel directly.
Okay.
The United States, unless there's daylight,
we have to move on.
Have a role,
and that makes a lot of sense. I know Professor Eugene Kontrovich will probably say, "Well, there hasn't been much success in the past anyway, especially right. given the role of America." But why don't you just respond to that? What Khaled just said.
The America isn't the indispensable player here. You could like America, you could not like America, but you can't get around America. Much of the peace process is much of the negotiations involve security guarantees for Israel, which has been multiply attacked by its neighbors. Those security guarantees, I don't think any foreign country, can guarantee Israel's security, and I don't think even America would step in a pinch to protect Israel, but if anyone will, it's only America. No one else has the credibility to send troops to the Jordan Valley to protect from attacks against the border. America is the only one who can deliver the goods. I'll tell you what's going to happen. The embassy is going to be moved to a location which is regarded as in eastern Jerusalem at the end of next year. There will be other countries, not many, but maybe a few, which will follow suit, and it will no longer
probably
be
not more than
say that there is an international consensus supporting this, unless consensus means everyone who agrees with us.
All right. That's the final word. Khaled El-Ghindi and Eugene Kontrovich, thanks very much for this interesting and stimulating conversation. You've created enemies here in the booth here with Carrie and me, but we'll move on. As Israelis and Palestinians will move on, so will we. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
A lot of fun.
All right. So,
oh my God. Oh my God.
Just stop laughing. We got one more quick segment. Stay tuned. Carrie and I will be killing each other after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Here's a list of reasons why AT&T prepaid is a great prepaid choice, according to Julius and Deb.
When you switch to AT&T prepaid,
you get two ZTE Maven 3 smartphones for free.
And two lines for $75 a month.
Hey, I was going to say that.
Beat you to it.
AT&T prepaid has no annual contract.
No activation fee.
And AT&T's reliable network.
No hidden fees.
No credit check.
No compromises.
AT&T prepaid has plans for people who like great prices.
Plans for people who like great deals.
Flexibility.
Reliability.
Customers named Deb.
Customers named Julius.
Customers in Springfield.
Customers not in Springfield.
The list is long.
Really long.
Thanks, Julius. Thanks, Deb.
You're welcome, announcer guy. Hey, I was saying that.
No matter your reason, switch to AT&T prepaid and get two free ZTE Maven 3 smartphones and two lines on AT&T's reliable network.
Limited time offer available at participating AT&T stores. Two for $75 per month requires two new lines of service on the $45 monthly plan each under a multi-line account. Account owner on autopay. Reliable network claim for third-party sources, fees, coverage, and other restrictions apply. Details at att.com/prepaid.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Doctor, give me the news. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and on the next Midday Lab, we'll take your calls, and I'll be joined by Anahita Sattigathwar. Lauren Savant is... She's busy. She's a very busy lady, don't you know? She'll be back soon enough, and we will discuss, amongst other things, Mr. Trump defending an alleged perpetrator of domestic violence. How's that all going? With that and more on the next Midday Live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervy's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervy.
Well, it says that anything that can go wrong can be made right, but I'm not sure that we can accomplish that today with Carrie and me. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. The old Murphy's Law, we didn't turn that one upside down.
Especially
today.
When you're talking about the Middle East.
After 5 years, Carrie and I are not speaking to each other anymore. We're on opposite ends of the spectrum. And I'll tell you, Carrie, not that I'm speaking to you, but the lights are up. What does it mean? I've never seen this board lit up like this. It's like Christmas here.
Oh, I know. This topic is a hot topic and people all have their opinion on it. We had two extremely well-read, educated, and the nicest people on opposite sides of the Middle East.
Well, we don't know that they're nice.
Well, they to each other, at least. Let's say that, because I've never seen
that
before.
Yeah, I would have liked them to really, you know, drop the gloves like you drop them with me.
Oh, well, that was, yeah, just a couple times. But this is interesting. My father, when I was a kid, would take me, he would put these peace talks on with Zionists and Palestinians, and he would put and have these big talks and have them come together and talk. He wanted peace so badly in the Middle East. It was one of his biggest, people don't know that about him, but every few months, he would hold these huge talks and hoping that that would help.
Well, I'm not sure the move of the embassy to Jerusalem will actually meet his goals. As we say, may he rest in peace. Here, let's just pick up one of the callers here. Ira in Los Angeles, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Hello, pleased to be here.
So
I just want to say that it all comes down to who owns Jerusalem. And it is indisputable. Israel owns Jerusalem. Israel had Jerusalem as its capital 1,000 years before Jesus was born, 1,600 years before Muhammad is born. Not only does Israel own it historically, Israel owns it by international law. Your listeners should take a look at the San Remo conference where the great powers of the world awarded all of ancient Palestine, which went both sides of the Jordan River, to Israel. And finally, Israel owns Jerusalem from a moral perspective, too, because, don't forget, it was Jordan who attacked Israel in the Six-Day War. I will bet you most of your listeners do not know that a few days before the war started, Levi Eshkol, the Prime Minister of Israel, called up Jordan's King Hussein and pleaded with him to stay out of the war, telling King Hussein Israel has no quarrel with Jordan. And so what does Jordan do at the start of the war? They bombard Israel with long-range artillery, and the consequences, Israel recaptured eastern part of Jerusalem, and there's a moral to that. There's a price to be paid for starting and losing a war.
All right. Well, that's not simply put. That's a lot of information. Thanks for calling, Ira. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now on the line is Ariel. Where are you in, Ariel?
I am in Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca, New York.
I am the national co-director for Code Pink. I actually split my time between Ithaca, New York and Washington, D.C.
And we only have a couple minutes, so tell us, I imagine you're not in favor of this move, the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Absolutely not. So, I want to begin by saying that I'm an American Jew and that American Jewish opinion, according to polls, by and large, is opposed to the declaration of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and to the move of the embassy. You know, the international law is incredibly clear on this issue.
Okay, one minute.
International law says that Jerusalem is supposed to be a city that is ruled through international law and not through capture of Israel. This is an act of incitement by Israel.
Well, but it would be the Americans who are inciting it, because if the Americans are moving, Ariel, we got to run.
It's an act of incitement both by Israel and by the U.S.
Fair enough. Thanks for the call.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We have to get going. People just want to talk about this subject. I wish we had another hour. Maybe we'll get a show that goes on an hour every night, 5 days a week, and
that
we can talk about
wonderful.
It. But we won't be talking to each other. Carrie Kasem, Alan Gervie, bidding you farewell. May there be peace, at least in this country, hopefully in the Middle East. See you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.